This is the Skirted Roundtable. I'm Linda Merrill from Surroundings.
And this is Megan Arcat from Beach Bungalow 8.
And this is Jenny Webb with Cote de Texas.
And this week on the Skirted Roundtable, we are welcoming architectural photographer Michael J. Lee, who is based out of New England, and I'm lucky enough to say he's my photographer. And Michael has a very interesting background in that he comes from a design background and moved into photography. So, Michael, welcome to the Skirted Roundtable.
Thank you. Thank you, Linda and Megan and Joni, for having me. I am quite humbled looking at the list of past guests that you've had.
Well, I think it's good for our listeners to hear, you know, hear from the little people as well, not just the stars. But as we do with everybody, we want to hear about your background and how you started out in the design field and got to be doing what you are doing today.
Well, I'm a first generation American. My grandfather and my great grandfather both were in the shipbuilding industry. And my mother was a hairstylist. She worked in Glasgow, Scotland, and she used to do trade shows with Vidal Sassoon. And so I come from a creative and hand-building background. I grew up in New Jersey, and growing up, I always wanted to be an architect, except I never had the math scores. So someone suggested that I try interior design. So I applied at Wentworth in Boston, which at the time was the only FIDER-accredited interior design program in New England. And one of my design programs, or projects I should say, was with Ann Lennox, who's a local designer in Newton. And part of this program was we had to design the graphics as well as the interior design. And she was very impressed with the graphics that I came up with. And so she hired me to create an ad for her husband, Jim Sursich, who is a custom upholsterer. So anyway, I sent my resume out at the time when I needed to find a position in the design field to everyone who was ASID. And I had this very simple sentence on my resume that I had done an ad for Jim Sursich. Well, the New England Hall of Fame designer Celeste Cooper used Jim Sursich for custom upholstery. And so she gave him a call and spoke with Ann Lennox, and they gave me a roaring review, and that was my first job out of design school. And it was also my first taste of architectural photography, because I had the opportunity on several occasions to assist Celeste on shoots with Richard Mandelkorn. And I just remember being infatuated with the whole process. I remember in Celeste's apartment at the Four Seasons, in the foyer, she's had this Sasaki chair that had this wonderful sort of undulating, curving back to it. And it sat on a leather tile floor, and the walls were stark white. And the way that Rick photographed it, very tight and sort of just accentuating the sensuality of the chair, and the way that the chair's image was being projected onto the wall from the way the light hit it, it just stuck with me how that little detail meant more, or was more evocative than seeing the whole space itself. And I worked with Celeste for about 3 years, and she taught me a tremendous amount about scale, art, fashion, architecture. And she also taught me a lot about text and about words and about how they can be an integral part of design. And she taught me a quote by Marcel Proust, that is, the real act of discovery consists not in finding new lands, but in seeing with new eyes. And I think about that a lot now that I am a photographer. And when Celeste closed...
Excuse me, will you repeat that?
The real act of discovery consists not in finding new lands, but in seeing with new eyes.
I like that quote.
And that's by Marcel Proust. After I left Celeste, I went to work with, as everyone in the New England community calls him, Mr. Fitzgerald. Even his clients who were elder than him called him Mr. Fitzgerald. He just commanded that type of respect. And I spent 13 years working there as a designer, assisting him on projects, as well as taking on my own projects. And what he taught me was humility, grace, beauty. And the most important thing he taught me was never to turn down never to turn down the small job. He would always say, you know, if someone comes to you and they want to reupholster a sofa, take it. Because that can lead to the whole house, and that can lead to a lifelong client. And it's because of that wisdom that in photography, one thing that I do is I offer per image services. So, you know, traditionally it was always, oh, we have to hire him for half day or full day. But, you know, with the website and with blogs and with everything going on in digital media, you may only want one or two or three photos done. And so I try to make myself available to be able to give that as an opportunity.
You know, when you and I this summer were talking, Michael, and you mentioned, we were talking about you're working with Mr. Fitzgerald, and you said that about, you know, always take the single project, you know, the one piece kind of job. And it really, you know, made me rethink sort of how I've done things, because I've definitely stuck my nose up at those jobs. And, you know, so when you hear someone of his stature says that, it makes you have to really think about yourself again.
Well, I mean, the funny thing about him is his father owned a grocery store in Andover, and it was sort of, you know, the Whole Foods of its time. And a lot of the wealthy people who lived in Andover would order their groceries from him, and he was delivery guy. And so he would deliver the groceries to these amazing estates in Andover. And that was sort of his first taste of this other world. And he never forgot how, you know, going in through the kitchen or the service entrance, you know, you can work your way up to coming into the front door. He taught me a lot of good lessons.
I think it's kind of ironic that you were working with him and developing your photography skills, and yet there's almost no pictures of his work. There's so few pictures of his work out and about because he's so private.
The funny thing is, he was the, I may have it wrong, but I believe he was the editor at the time, the mid to late 60s of House Beautiful magazine. And then he was the international editor for Architectural Digest in the early 70s. And the interesting thing about him is he never felt that his work needed to be documented, because he felt it was so personal, and that he felt that it was sort of an imposition to ask his clients to go through that. And that's something that I always am thinking about. You know, one thing that I do that maybe other photographers don't do, and that is I don't sell stock images as a practice. I just feel that it's wrong. I feel that, you know, I don't want clients to be on vacation and to see a book in a bookstore, you know, great at romantic escapes, and have their bedroom on the front cover, and they didn't know that was going to happen.
It's true.
You know, and I just think that that's so inappropriate, and it's like not worth the $150 or $200 you got for that image. You know, to me, it's, you know, I can go into this later on, but one thing that's, because of my background, copyright has always been an issue with designers and photographers, and it's been this eternal struggle of, you know, it's my design, you know, why do I have to pay you for the right to show my own work? You know, I had this recent conversation with an artist. I did a photo shoot for this designer, and she had done the mural, and she said to me, it's kind of funny that, you know, I have to come to you and get permission from you to use an image of something that I created. You know, and there's that artist, you know, right over, okay, it's mine. No, it's mine. No, the architect owned it. The designer owns it. And so I try to be as open as possible to allowing everyone to be a part of that, and allowing everyone to own that.
But it's your photograph, right? So why would she even
question? It is, but I'm not Ansel Adams. I didn't wander through the landscape of New England and discover your client's master bedroom. I was an invited guest into their private dwelling, and I was asked to photograph, and sometimes I use the word document, their private home. And yes, technically I own the copyright to it, but also I believe that it's a collaboration. You know, I didn't go in there and create what you're seeing. I simply captured it. You know, yes, I may have moved things around, and I may have done things to make it look maybe better than it was, or make it show better than it did in real life. But I did not create that. You know, I can't say that I'm Ansel Adams and I was walking through Yosemite Park and I captured something of striking beauty that was created on the earth. It's something that the designer, the architect, the builder, coming from that background, I know they put so much into it. And I know that this is all a part of their work, and I feel that it's a shared responsibility and it's a shared image of their work. It's not to say that if I'm hired by a designer and then the contractor wants to use an image that they don't have to buy that right. I do sell that right for that, but I also don't nickel and dime everyone, so that way if you hire me and you do a shoot and you now want to use it for an ad or you want to use it in a book, you have to come back to me and get permission, or you have to pay for that.
Michael, how would you feel? I mean, on your, you've got this great website and you have, your portfolio shows, you know, your work. As a blogger, a lot of times I like to go through photographers' websites or stylists' websites because there are beautiful photographs. I always credit them, but, you know, hearing what you have to say, I wonder, would that be, how would you feel if you stumbled across someone's blog and they put a link to your site, but you saw your work?
I have no problem with you copy and pasting an image from my website onto your blog. I would appreciate getting credit for the image as the photographer.
Oh, good.
But,
I just
I
did
mean,
that.
Am
on
I going to like scan the world of Google and get a crack team of lawyers on everybody who copies and pastes an image into their blog? No, I have better things to do with my life. You're going to get me, if, especially if you credit me, you're going to get me more Google hits, and you're going to get.
I agree.
You know,
right.
So I what am I supposed to do about that? You know, it's like, am I really going to waste all my energy going after everyone who uses or reuses an image? I did a shoot for a designer a few years ago in Nantucket, and I actually found the other day that this detail of a lamp on nightstand is now on some lighting website, and they're using it to sell the lamp, which probably the lamp came from them. I mean, am I really going to call them and tell them they owe me money for that?
Well, a lot of photographers would.
I know.
I was going to say, I think I would in that case.
I know they would, but it to me, it's not worth it.
Yeah.
I used a photographer. I came across a house that I had done in a local Los Angeles Homes magazine, and I pulled it off of their website and put it on a portfolio page I had on an old website. And the photographer wrote to me and demanded money and all kinds of things. He was really upset by it. I just removed it. That was the first time I had run into that.
But does that make him then a photographer that you would ever in your wildest dreams, you know, recommend?
No. And I
on the same fence as I use the master bedroom, you know, scenario and being on a book. As the copyright owner, I own that image and I can sell it to whoever I want. So if I want to sell it to some company in Barcelona and have that image of your client's bedroom on the front cover of Dream Bedrooms and have your client run into it or you run into it, I don't have to give you credit. I don't have to give the client credit or reveal the location, which you probably wouldn't want anyway. But, you know, the sort of like the shoe is on the other foot. Now I'm getting credit for something and you're not, and you did all the work. How would you feel about that? You're on the cover of a book, but you don't get any credit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I feel that there's sort of a shared onus on everyone's part. One of the things I like to do is I always like to know who the builder and the designer and the architect are. And I like to, from the beginning, say, okay, can we all three of us, the designer, architect, and builder, go on in this together and make a collaborative effort? It gives you control, so everyone is getting the same look and feel about the space that you've just created. It also inconveniences the client as least amount as possible, because we all know that photo shoots are expensive, they're time consuming, and if the client is away on vacation, you know, it's intrusive to their life, especially if they have children or if one of the members of the family is home all the time, you know, and you're moving lights and you're taking paintings off the wall and putting different paintings up on the wall. And so if we can go in together and collaborate on this, it just, I think, makes it better for everyone.
You style as well. You'll go in and completely style the space and move things around.
I will.
Just say,
well,
does that ever, I was going to say, does that ever, have you ever come across designers that get ruffled by that or?
Well, I did, but
not
that's,
at all.
You know.
Oh. But when I say style, I don't mean that I'm going to take, you know, part of it is because of my background. I know what I'm looking at.
Right. You have an advantage that most...
I know enough to walk into. It's like I was doing a shoot with a writer once, and they were commenting on how wonderful this antique bed was. And I said, that's not an antique. That's from Baker. You know, and I know what I'm looking at. And so I also know when I walk in to say, oh, that was grandmother's lamp. Do you mind if we take that out for the shoot? And most designers are like, oh, thank God. Can we do something else? You know, or this is the painting that we inherited over the living room fireplace. Can we use something else? And I know that, you know, I know that most, even the best designers only get 90% there. And then the client puts the brakes on because they're either out of money or out of patience or they want to do it themselves. And those, that last 10% can kill, you know, what you want to present as your work. And so I actually get along great with designers because it's sort of like a show house. Show houses are amusing to me because there's no filter, there's no client, there's no one there to edit the designer. And so 9 times out of 10, show houses are every good idea and bad idea a designer has ever had all thrown into one room. And so, you know, having the vocabulary to be able to talk to a designer about what's going on in the space and what I think they were trying to do or what I think they did successfully, but what if we did this, this, and this to really follow through on what you were trying to do. They see that I'm out there for them, and they see that I'm only trying to help them. One of the things that I do is I scout every job that I shoot. So I go there, and I visit the space, I walk through, I take pictures, and I email you, and I let you know, this is what I think we should do as far as composition goes. You know, look at it. This is what I think is missing, or this is what I think should be changed. You know, and that's very beneficial at the end of the day on the photo shoot because you're paying for a block of time for me. And you want to be as productive as possible. If you can get 20 shots out of me as opposed to 10, because I wasn't running around looking for a towel that wasn't wrinkled or a bar of soap or the perfect object for the table, you're going to feel like you got a better shoot out of me. You're going to feel like you got your value and your money's worth, and you're also going to get more polished and professional looking images.
Well, I would definitely attest to that because last summer when Michael, you did the Boston townhouse that I did, and you were doing the living room, and it's not a very big property, and across the hall is another room that I had done some of the room, but a lot of it hadn't really been done because it was kind of their, you know, media sort of flop around in room. But your eye, you know, the picture you wanted to take involved me finishing at least a vignette in that room. And if we'd waited to the day of the shoot, we would have had to have closed the doors or done something.
You know, like I was saying about a show house, a lot of the time, a designer is an artist, whether you're an architect or a designer, you're an artist. And sometimes it's hard for you to step back and see the big picture. And sometimes it's hard for you to zoom in and see what the little details are because you're thinking about, you know, maybe the client didn't go for something in the room that you really wanted them to, and you maybe always see that that is missing and that's wrong with the space. And so I try to find all the good elements and try to bring them together to get the completion of what your design idea was in the end.
How many rooms, you've done, you know, good amount of shooting for different, a lot of different designers. How many rooms would you say you've done that you could actually say were completely finished? Like everything to the penny was done.
I shot a house for Manuel de Santorin. And apart from him being the utmost gentleman, you didn't want to move anything. Everything was just perfect. And you went in there, and, you know, when I do a shoot, basically I'm setting up for the architecture. To me, the architecture becomes the composition. And then the scale is the elements within that composition and how they interplay with one another. You didn't want to touch anything. Everything was perfect. And the wonderful thing about this space is the two red paintings right and left. The walls were eggplant, and outside of the chandelier, which is a big shade, there was very little light in this room. It was very dark. The two red paintings on left and right are these military figures. And if you didn't turn on the overhead light or you didn't use artificial lighting...
Oh, I can see that.
They just looked like sort of somebody painted a canvas red. You didn't get the detail. Mm-hmm. And the white objects on the table, each one of them, if you turned them over, had a number under them. And there was a map for the cleaning lady. Oh. So she could put them back exactly the way they were.
Wow.
He was of the level, but not even that. He had a client who understood, and he could bring them to the level that this was 110% complete. You know, I did one of the very first shoots I did was for Michael Carter, who's a very well-renowned designer in Boston, and he had me go out to Nantucket to scout this project. And I could tell he was very nervous on the way out. And I said, Michael, what's wrong? What's going on? He said, well, you know, you worked for Richard Fitzgerald. All of your interiors must have been the ultimate and, you know, designed top to bottom and no stone left unturned. You know, and this still needs some things. It still needs some tweaking. And I said, Michael, trust me. I don't think there was a Fitzgerald daub that we ever finished 100%. I understand that this is what happens with clients. You know, we went around and we scouted, and Michael and I and his staff worked on what needed to be filled in for the shoot to finish it and to polish it.
I just wonder if you realize what a unique photographer you are because of your background.
I've been told that I see things differently. I've been told that my images evoke a feeling. Something that I learned, I guess, from Celeste is I've always been interested in words, and I've always been interested in what people say about design. And recently someone turned me on to Rose Tarlow, who we all know, Melrose House, that she had recently redone, or I think she just recreated a website for herself. Anyway, she's quoted on the homepage as saying, I am not a writer, but words and furniture have a lot in common. Both are inanimate. They don't move themselves, yet they can move you. And I find that it's my position or job to move potential clients to, you know, I never like shots. I call them real estate shots where they give away too much. I feel that photography should evoke a feeling within someone. It should excite them. It should interest them. It should want them to want more without getting it. So that they have to search or look for the more that they want to seek. Mm. And it also allows their imagination to envision what else might be going on, and therefore they can fill in the blanks with what they would want to see, as opposed to showing them things that maybe they might not like. And it was always interesting to me as a designer when clients would come with these binders full of magazine cutouts. It's always like, oh, I like the lamp here. I like the sofa there. I like the chair here. Well, I don't like anything here, but I like that painting. Where do you think the painting came from? You know, and they would just pick apart these images. And so I think one thing I've learned is that sometimes the less you show, the more positive the reaction will be from a potential client, because they can fill in the blanks on their own with what they might want to see. You know, oh, I see what you're trying to do here. I don't see everything, but I get the concept, and if this was for me, you know, the rest of it would look like this, and I can see that you could give that to me. Whereas, you know, here it is, here's the big picture, this is what I did. Okay, now I'm going to go in and pick it apart, and I'm going to say all the things I don't like. I really only like this. Well, maybe somebody else could do that for me.
Can you give us some advice? You know, obviously there's no question that hiring a professional, if you know, you've really got a great space that you've done, you really need to hire a professional. But a lot of people just simply can't afford it. And so can you recommend a few things that people who are doing that should be doing to really raise the level of their own pictures of their own projects?
Well, first of all, I think that there's this sort of this myth that, you know, because I don't have a professional camera or a good camera that I can't take good pictures. I've taken pictures with my iPhone that if the composition is there and I was able to use the available lighting that's there, they can be as good as something that you might think is professional. The most important thing, or the thing that people really need to understand when they're taking pictures on their own, is scale. When you draw an elevation, you're drawing it at roughly an eye level height of 60 inches. You know, when you're figuring out what the scale of the baseboard or the crown molding should be, It's based on an elevation of a room that's between 8 and 10 or 15 feet tall, but your elevation is viewed at eye level, but it's viewed at an eye level that is lower than when you're standing. And so the first thing you should do is when you go into a space that you want to photograph is sit down. You know, if you ever have sort of observed on a photo shoot, generally the camera is about belt high. It's about between, say, 25 and 42 inches off the ground. It's not up at standing height. And that's to keep the scale in proportion with how it should be viewed. You know, rooms should be experienced when you're in them, when you're sitting in them. You know, if you're standing up in a living room looking and taking a picture, the furniture is going to look disproportionate. Generally, it's going to look smaller than it really is. And so if you just sit down, you know, the best thing you do is take a chair, say a dining room chair or a hall chair that has a stiff back, and put the camera on the back of the chair so that way, A, it's level, and B, it's not moving or vibrating. But that's also a good height to have the camera scale-wise to take a picture of the space. You know, when you...
I never knew that at all.
You know, you'd be surprised how many photographs are taken, like, at knee level. You know, and some of the ones that evoke, you know, like, you know, those types of feelings are ones where the camera is very low. You know, the most important thing in architectural photography is, A, that the camera is level, because obviously you want all of your lines perpendicular or square, and B, is that the proportion is correct. You know, again, when you walk into a space, everything is under you or below your eyesight. Now, when you take a picture and if the camera is level, what you're going to get mostly at standing height is a lot of ceiling. So you want to bring the camera down to almost sitting height. Linda made a comment about a shot that I did of a bathtub. And I think she said something about, are you in the bathtub?
Like, how the heck was this picture taken?
I have made sort of out of different materials a tripod, if you will, that allows me to place a camera on top of a solid surface. So the camera in that shot is sitting on the marble, and I think it was a 35 millimeter lens. So I'm missing the marble that's in the immediate foreground, so it looks as if I'm sitting in the water.
Yeah.
But again, it's the idea is that I'm trying to make a potential client feel like, I want to be in this bath. This is what it's like to be in this bath.
We'll put that picture on the post because it's really a remarkable photograph and it totally makes you want to be sitting in that bathtub.
You know, and that's a lot of it is that you want your clients to experience the rooms and feel like they're in the rooms. And that a lot, you'd be surprised how much of that has to do with the camera position. If you don't have artificial light, which most
I want to talk about lighting.
Yeah, that's what I was going to have you bring up, because I see so many people using a flash. And I don't know much about photography, but I think that people misuse the flash.
What you have to understand is the human eye has the ability to expose for the level of light inside and the level of light outside. A camera cannot. A camera opens its shutter and it allows a certain amount of light to come in, and then it closes it. Now, if the light outside is, to use a camera term, 10 stops higher than the light inside, if you're exposing for the light level inside, the light outside is going to get exposed, overblown, or blown out.
So that's when it's, like, really bright in the, like, white.
So that's when, you know, what happens mostly with most people is when they take a picture inside, if they're facing a window, the camera's going to expose for outside, and that's why outside is generally clear and inside is dark. And so what you want to try to do with a camera, if you can, is to point it at the ground and then hold down your button, your shutter button, so that way the exposure reading that it took was for the ground, which should be darker, and then hold it up and continue pressing the button. So that way you're exposing more for the inside as opposed to the outside.
I'm going to try that. I never knew that.
One thing that you do want to use a flash for is what the flash does is it equalizes, or it fills in the available light that's inside. You know, outside, unless it's a cloudy day, is generally going to be brighter than inside. And so this isn't always ideal, but the best thing to do is to shoot with the window to your back or to your side. So that way you're using the available light, the outside light, to fill in the image, to light it up within. You know, if you're shooting straight at a window, that's one of the more difficult lighting scenarios that you can have. And, you know, without artificial lighting, you have two choices. You expose for inside or you expose for outside. There's no middle ground there, because the extreme of the outside level of light and the inside level of light is too great for the camera to compensate.
But to get even more specific, I just found the bathtub. That is an incredible picture. But to get even more specific, as a rule, I noticed that you do have all your lights on inside, and the lamps too. Is that how you usually take an inside shot?
It's funny. It depends on who you're working for. One of the things that I've learned recently is that magazines that tend to be geared toward green design or green design build companies generally prefer the lights to be off. Because if you think about it, why are the lights on in the middle of the day? That's not good green design. You're wasting energy. You know, from a photographer's standpoint, it's better to have the lights on because it helps you to fill in the light inside. You know, it's making up for light that's lost. It's more difficult to shoot something inside where all the interior artificial lights are off. And then, you know, therefore you have to provide your own lighting. You know, one of the best days to shoot if you're shooting as an amateur is on a cloudy day, because the light is more even. You're not fighting the bright sun. You're not fighting shadows that may appear on the inside when you don't have the availability of artificial strobes in different strategic positions.
Joni lives in a house where she has the lights on during the day.
24/7.
We have talked about this.
Joni's chandelier is always on.
She likes having her house ablaze, so she's right now thinking...
Except at night. I like it, like, real dark. It's weird. I don't know why.
But if you think about it, lately with the green design trend, it does make sense that, you know, why are the lights on during the day?
Right.
Because they're so
dark. You know, unless
dark.
It's a chandelier or a sconce or something where the light becomes an accent feature, you know, it's not necessary to have the light on.
No,
I
am looking at an image of yours. It's a 12 bedroom, a blue and white 12 bedroom. And Yeah, and the lamps are not on, and you actually lose. I could see that it might even be warmer if the light had been on. You know, I just wonder
the glass lamp on the nightstand is off,
and the desk
and the white lamp on the desk is off.
Right. So, what was your thinking?
My thinking was that the sun coming in and making the interesting patterns on the rug, to me, having the light on the table and on the desk, which would have been more of a yellow color,
right,
would have detracted from the pureness of this blue and white crisp room. The headboard, the thing that you don't know by seeing this, is the headboard is actually more of a linen white, and I actually in Photoshop made it more white and less yellow, because to me, it detracted from that blue and white Christmas.
Do you Photoshop a lot?
Yeah.
You do more than you think. There's a lot more than you might know that goes on in Photoshop. You know, most images are compiled between 2 to 3 images that are layered together for different exposure times.
That's right.
Again, because
the
camera can only capture one light level. You know, you're trying. You have your low lights and your highlights, and then there's the midtones, and you're trying to find an equal balance.
Well, I wanted to ask you this, Michael. It seems to be a trend in real estate photography where they will take three images of the same, you know, three images with a low light, a mid light, and a highlight, and merge the images together.
It's called HDR, yes.
What? Do you like that?
No, it looks computer generated.
Yeah, it looks weird. But there's a photographer in town that does it, and then there's a blogger that is a photographer, and she's a real estate photographer, and she uses this too. And we had a discussion because I was like, how do every room looks the same? You know?
The worst, I think, is when they do it outside for landscaping. It's like, you know, there becomes this fine line of, yes, we have the ability to do it in the age of digital photography, but do we do it? You know, I tend to try to be more of a purist, and I try to shoot things sort of right the first time and not try to Photoshop them later. But what's happening and what you do see in real estate and other industries is this trend toward it. HDR is a program where you can blend up to 7 or 8 or 10 different exposures into one, and the computer, based on the histogram of the image, takes the highlight and the low light and all the midtones, and then it blends them to the point that it just looks fake. It looks like a CAD rendering to me.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, there are definite dark areas of rooms and there are light areas of rooms, and to overlight an area that should be dark is, it takes away from the ambiance. It removes the romanticism of the environment and of the space.
They're so gorgeous. I mean, and that, you know, and that's another thing you said, well, it doesn't matter about the camera, but
I mean, it does in professional, but I mean, what I'm saying is if you have a good eye and you know what to shoot, yes, the quality can matter, but the composition is there.
Yeah.
But an angle in the room? I mean, you know, do you do it from a corner of the room generally? Do you have,
if you're using a prosumer or just a normal camera, you generally want to shoot towards the corner, because straight on shots are very technically difficult, because you end up, the camera creates distortion, or the lens creates distortion in the image. And so straight on shots are more technically difficult than angled or corner shots.
Mm-hmm.
It so much of it depends on what the architecture is doing. You know, if there's something that's very symmetrical, then I will do a straight on shot because I want to accentuate that.
Like my little bar shot. That's a straight on
right.
shot.
Right. But if there's some, but that's not, and that's not symmetrical. It's just right. that, I don't know, just sometimes it's just a gut feeling that this is going to work.
Well, that's more of a vignette.
Right.
I think, I just know that it seems that there is something to be said about what angle you're approaching the shot, from which angle you're approaching the shot in a room.
I mean, you have to remember that you're in a three-dimensional space and you are going to be viewing it in a two-dimensional form, a photograph. And so things get stacked, things get layered. And so depending on what's going on, like sometimes when you shoot something at an angle, something that's in your foreground ends up on top of something that's in the background. It becomes busy and it doesn't read as a clean image.
When you've gone into some of these rooms, this is sort of backtracking, and you know, you and the designer collaborate to style and sort of create the space to look the way you all would like to have it look. Does the client sometimes see it that way and decide that you know, that they agree and then maybe that is how it should be?
That happens a lot.
I've
had quite a few shoots where, you know, there wasn't any art on the walls or there wasn't a lamp or something, and the designers borrowed that, and then the designers had to go back to the design center and make sure it's still available, because now the client's seen the photograph and
seeing is
believing, and they're like, oh, yes. Well, you know, it really does need that.
Mm-hmm.
I've had quite a few designers actually use this process as a selling tool.
They've joked with me
that it's paid for the photography.
Well, have you ever been hired to do the design after of?
No.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
I don't think that's a place I want to go.
Did we actually cover why you made the switch?
I think we kind of skipped over that. I know, Michael, you said that your interest in photography really went back to when your first job was Celeste Cooper, which I didn't realize it went back that far. But, we sort of skipped over the transition.
Well, to me, becoming a photographer was sort of a lateral move. For me, there's three elements: light, scale, and composition. And it's about imagining a space. And as a designer, you're trying to translate a a one-dimensional plan to a client and trying to sell them on something that's three-dimensional. And as a photographer, you're taking a three-dimensional space and you're trying to create something that is representative and that is compelling, but yet is viewed in a two-dimensional form. As a designer, I enjoyed being in the supporting role. And as a photographer, I get to support a lot of New England's designers, architects, and builders in sort of completing what their visions are or accentuating what their visions are. And so for me, it's sort of I'm doing what I was doing before, and I don't have to deal with the clients.
There's something to be said for that.
One of the things that can drain, as you know, any designer is a client, you know, a lot. And I've been fortunate. The clients that I've worked with generally didn't grow up with what they have, and so they appreciated it. But at the end of the day, if something went wrong or something wasn't the way they wanted it to be, they, you know, that vicious self comes out, and it can be difficult. And I sympathize a lot with the designers that have to deal with clients like that. Somebody said to me, you know, you have the best of both worlds. You get to be creative and you get to, you know, create this wonderful, beautiful art form, but yet you walk away at the end of the day. You know, I have to deal with the client the next morning. And so I really like that aspect of it. I'm also a very sort of technical, geeky type person. And so as much as I love the creative aspect, I get very excited sitting in front of Photoshop and making decisions and doing all of the technical things that I get to do after the fact. Because I scout, I love that I get to see where it is. And then I love the process that I go through with my client about what it can be. And then I love being there on the shoot when it all comes together. And then I love going home and sitting in front of the computer and looking at what we develop and bringing out its best aspects and putting it all together to create this incredible image. And so I sort of look at myself as being in this assistant role, you know, once a bridesmaid, never a bride, I guess. But I like that part of the role that I have. You know, I like that I've worked for two very established but yet very different designers in my career. And I also like the fact that now I'm meeting all of these new and different designers, architects, and builders. And in that same relationship, I'm getting to assist them in helping them to look their best.
How do you feel about like issues of outlets and light sockets and wires and all those kind of things? We talked about a little bit about that. Depending on the publication, there are sort of different views.
There's an organization called NARI, which is the National Association of Remodelers, and they have something called the Cody Awards. And because it's a group of builders, they have in the past disqualified entries where they couldn't see an outlet or the smoke detector that must have been there was gone. But generally speaking, if there's an exit sign or a carbon monoxide detector or an outlet that's right in the middle of the picture, I will get rid of it. You know, and I have no qualms about that. You know, I have no qualms about photoshopping the right painting to be hanging on the wall as opposed to what the client wanted to be hanging on the wall. Because again, at the end of the day, this is representational of your work, and this is how you're going to get more work. And so you want to show your best work, and it should be about you and the creative process that you went through as a designer or architect. And you should be showing what you feel you do best. And so if we have to do a little smoke and mirrors to get to that point, I'm comfortable with that. A lot of work that I get lately is for ads, and you know, they're hiring you to do one or two pictures for a full page shoot. And when I do an ad, I try to do something that's a little bit more edgy than maybe that I would do normally, because you know, when you're going through a magazine and there's 100 other ads and they're all beige or they're all one color or whatever, you're trying to stand out. And so you want to try to do something that's going to pop off the page and that somebody's going to stop and maybe spend a second or two and think about it or look at the elements of it or what makes that interesting or why am I drawn to that.
Yeah, but I just love the way you styled it with the greens. And then, you know, then the little rose. I mean, it's just one. It's just beautiful. And then all
the funny thing is, like, Linda had the rose on her windowsill, and it didn't work because it just didn't work. And yeah. So, but I liked the way Linda had put the rose in that little rose button. And I just had that in the back of my mind. We need to use that somewhere. And then as we were going through, I think that was the third shot that we did, maybe.
Yeah.
It sort of fell into place. You had the red wax label on the Tanqueray, and it just sort of made sense at that moment that yeah. that was where it should be.
Because originally, you would put it on my countertop, and I didn't like it in that shot. And you were like, right. Fine, I'm going to use it somewhere else, though.
That space, even the white space between the copper and the all that's yeah. going on below, I mean...
That's my favorite. I just love that, just the calmness of the whole set.
I think this would make a great painting, you know? It would be such a pretty...
Well, it's I mean, if you were an artist and you were painting a still life, it's something that you would put together to paint. I mean, it's, yeah.
And if I ever have
this is a beautiful photograph with the copper sun and, I mean, anyway.
We kept talking about the chicken's ass.
Yeah.
On the, there's a chicken right in the, sort of to the left of center. And, you know, it was sort of like butt to the camera. We were trying to avoid that. But the camera was 18 inches away. There's very little room from where the camera was to this to this bar.
But I was using a very short lens or wide lens.
Magazines and publishing.
Yeah.
Well, the thing that in the last 2 years, as everyone is aware, you know, several large publishing companies have gone out of business and several important national magazines have shuttered. And what I'm seeing regionally is that they are inundated with submittals because A, we're in a recession and everybody wants to be published, and B, there are fewer choices for designers, architects to submit to. And so I think in the short term, it's benefited the regional publications because now they're getting a much higher quality work than they used to. With regards to national, I think I read this with regards to El Decor, that they had written an article that now that Met Home had closed, they were going to be more open-minded about their submittals and try to encompass the two magazines into one. And so I find that the nationals now are accepting or more open to accepting things that generally maybe would not have been on their radar. You know, you think of Veranda and you think of the continuality and the consistency of one feature to the next and how there's this flow of feel and look and vibe of what they're accepting. And I think that will change in that they'll be more open to what they are presenting as a cross-section of what the American designer is producing today. I also think that they're looking, you know, at the consumers, and they're hearing from what's going on in the industry, and they're starting to show things that are more attainable and maybe, you know, not as over the top and not as glamorous, but yet still chic and still stylish, but more comfortable. I think comfort will become a predominant factor in the next couple of years. The thing that I always remember is when I first started out doing this, one designer came up to me and sort of very boldly said to me, "But can you get me published?" And I just looked at them and I said, "Well, I can take a great photograph, but you can get you published. I can't get bad design published. I can only get good design published." And that's still true. I mean, at the end of the day, good design will prevail over bad design. And if it's not good, it's not going to make it.
So kind of what you're saying is that there's certainly a lot more competition because there's fewer magazines, but the magazines may be more open to a broader selection of styles.
Exactly. They're not going to stick to that, you know, this, you know, we only do this look. And this is what, you know, I mean, if you look at Veranda, not to pick on them, but one project after the other, they all start to look alike. You know, there's the similarities are jarring between one feature to the next. And one thing that you learn as a photographer is the art director has a singular vision of what they want, and they will try to produce images and sometimes alter images to create that singular vision. You know, there'll be this sort of color palette or this feel, something they can't quite put into words, but this feel that they always want to see or they're always looking for. And they will adjust things to get that concentric look throughout.
I think that's why magazines like House Beautiful and Elle Decor have low appeal, like Stephen Drucker at the helm. He does make such an effort to have the people around him, as he said, bring forth things that are not, you know, consistent and concentric, like you said, that they're different.
Right. I mean, why do you want to buy a magazine where one month after the other, everything starts to look the same? And that's one of the things that is wonderful about House Beautiful. You know, it's like, I'm going to buy something where I'm going to be surprised, where I'm going to be inspired, where I'm going to see something, you know, refreshing. I mean, let's face it, none of us is going to reinvent the wheel here, but at least we can produce something that may inspire us to do something different in our own homes, or may inspire us to want something different.
Well, Michael, thank you so much for joining us. This has been really, I think a lot of us struggle with having pictures taken and taking pictures, and it's great to learn a lot more about how to take a picture, look at a room, and then take the picture of the room.
Yeah, it was very, very interesting.
This has been the Skirted Roundtable with Megan Arquette from Beach Bungalow 8, Joni Webb from Cote de Texas, and I'm Linda Merrill from Surroundings, and this week we welcomed architectural photographer Michael J. Lee. You can visit us online at www.skirtedroundtable.blogspot.com, or you can download our podcasts from iTunes. Search for the Skirted Roundtable. Thanks so much for joining us, and we will be back soon.